you're being a responsible dog owner and you're walking down the street with your dog on leash, you're seeing, is that a dog? Does that dog have a human? And then all of a sudden you hear, don't worry, she's friendly. That to me is a cop-out. That's an excuse saying, my dog isn't off-leash trained. I can't call him back. You deal with the problem. If you have a dog that's social, it's not really a problem. If you have a dog that's antisocial or working on issues, it's a huge problem. So you yelling your dog is friendly, well, that doesn't matter if mine isn't. Hello and welcome back to Honest to Dog Podcast. It's your favorite dog trainer, Liz Foley, with her trusty co-host, Jeff Gadway.
You are my favorite dog trainer, Liz Foley.
Yay.
What can I tell you? Well, hey, what are we talking about today, Liz?
We're talking about recall and how to get your dog to come back when called every single time.
Total recall.
Exactly.
One might say.
Yes.
I don't know if you've even ever seen that movie.
I haven't. No. I don't think so.
Maybe we'll throw it on tonight?
Sounds good.
Well, as it relates to recall when it comes to dogs, why is this so important? I mean, it kind of came up today after you did your social circuit with your crew. You came home and you said, hey, I think we really need to do an episode about total recall because this is the time of year when it matters most. So mm-hmm. Can you just talk a little bit about why this is such a topical topic?
Yeah, so it's spring, right? And everything is starting to melt and wildlife is coming back into action and stuff smells really good for dogs. They are more likely to run off, escape backyards, run out front doors, get off leash. And if you don't have recall as part of your training, and like solid recall, it can pose a serious risk to your dog's life. So this is the time of year that more commonly dogs get hit by cars.
Sometimes, like even yesterday when we were walking Baker and Ty, I noticed, you know, Baker's nose was like stuck to the ground, right? And it was a little frustrating, but then I had to just be a little bit gentle on him or compassionate because I'm like, yeah, all these great smells have been locked in the ground for months and months and they're starting to emerge and kind of waft out. And so of course it's going to be completely overstimulating for him.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not all the time. That was like, what's changed? The season, kind of, we're rolling into spring.
Hopefully.
At least it feels like it with the snow melting and warmer weather. Yeah. That was pretty insightful then on your part.
What can I say? You're rubbing off on me.
You learn from the best.
That's right. You're my favorite dog trainer. I think it was this time of year, actually, the one time that Ty got out. Mm-hmm. I think it was right around this time of year. Can you tell that story? And just to put it into context, like this was several years ago before we had our fence around our backyard. Mm-hmm. Crazy to think that people with, you know, two dogs and a lot of dogs over,
I know,
didn't have a fence in their backyard. But anyways, that's another story for another day. But we didn't have a fence and Ty wasn't half the dog he is today in terms of kind of his training progression. So maybe share that story and how it relates to recall.
Mm-hmm. So we had like a little cornered off area that we had like used a snow fence to make a boundary for the dogs. But Ty in the beginning always had his leash on in addition to that, so that we are really super cautious. And I remember turning my back. This was in the spring. We had had him for enough time that I felt comfortable. Okay, he doesn't need the double leash. We have that fence there. He'll be fine. And I think I turned my back or went to the bathroom or something and came back and he wasn't there. And so he was probably left solo for maybe like 3 minutes max. Mm-hmm. And that's all it took, that he found a little escape route, something caught his nose or whatever, and he was gone. And I remember shouting to you, he's not here, and putting on my running shoes and just took off running down the block and was calling him.
You went one way. I mm-hmm. went the other way, like down the front past our street. And it was like pitch black, like dark. Mm-hmm. I think we got out flashlights and mm-hmm. then went into the neighborhood trying to track him down.
And so with all this going on, I'm pretty sure we left one of the doors open. And because I just took off running, you don't think, you're just like, oh my God, here's this dog roaming around. Who knows? Knowing Ty, he was probably like, this is the best freedom. Yeah. And then we're just terrified. But he was so like prey driven, so like anything, like a squirrel, take off running, all of that. So something clearly triggered him, because dogs usually only run away for one of two reasons. They don't like you, or their needs aren't being met, or they're left unattended and something sparks interest.
Mm. And he's very I'd say very eyes, right? Like he's very prey driven.
He's a sight hound.
He's a sight hound. And you know, stuff, whether it's a squirrel or a chipmunk or something like that, like he sees it and boom, he's gone.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why, like, I was always hesitant to know if he could be an off-leash dog at
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
I had some serious reservations about it because I saw that prey drive within him. I was like, how do we take the wildness out of this dog? Like, he's such a little hunter. Anyways, in this story, we come back home. I think we were like coming to meet back up and be like, what's plan B? What do we do now to find this dog? And like, oh, it's the worst feeling in the world. The worst feeling.
Yeah,
and we came panic. Back in the house and Ty was in the house looking at us being like, what's wrong, guys? Like, it's I've been here the whole time. Like, he did a lap and came back or something. I started to be like, did we even lose him at all? Like, it was just such a weird thing that happened. So he came back on his own. Amazing. Because yeah, the last thing you want is your dog running wild. And so anytime too, I see KW Ground Rescue posts something about a dog being missing, I share that. I make sure as many eyes as possible can see it because I lived that for only a fraction of a moment. And that terror, it really shakes you.
Yeah. I think we were on the other side of a dog kind of running away once too.
Mm-hmm.
We were sitting out front in front of the house one evening and we saw this dog just kind of trotting down the street with its... Did it have its leash on and it was just dragging its leash? Or
no, I don't think so.
No, it didn't have a leash on. But it was clearly not with a person. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we'll cut the story short, but you were able to gain control of this dog. We brought it into the house, put it in a crate, and contacted some of the ground rescue organizations, posted on Facebook, posted on Twitter and all of those things.
And that dog got picked up that night.
That night, somebody called us and they live... I don't know, maybe a kilometer from our house or, you know, for American
even,
listeners,
yeah.
You know, less than a mile. The dog, kind of like Ty, had been outside, left outside and got away. And, you know, he came like, I don't know, 5 minutes down the road kind of on a tour.
And we've got busy streets surrounding
us. Yeah.
So now that I'm thinking about it, I think I've seen... and tried to help at least like three dogs I've seen roaming. And it always tends to be around this time of year. The first concern is it tagged or microchipped? Like, how do I find the owner's information? And if that fails, going to the organizations that we follow on Facebook and mm-hmm. social media to get it the attention and get it home to its owner as soon as possible.
So the punchline here is recall is important.
Mm-hmm.
You got to work on recall, you know, whether it's being at a dog park and just needing to get your dog's attention back, or, you know, it gets out of the house like we had with Ty. So let's talk about when a dog should be given off-leash privileges versus not off-leash mm-hmm. privileges in that relationship to recall. And then we'll talk about how to build those skills and capabilities.
I have a firm rule where your dog should not be off-leash unless it walks beautifully on leash. I think a lot of people actually do off leash because they hate walking their dog on leash because it pulls, it's a maniac. They want it to burn more energy. So they actually unleash the beast.
Literally.
Yeah. And then they can't get their dog back. And the worst thing ever is when you're being a responsible dog owner and you're walking down the street with your dog on leash and then you're seeing, is that a dog? Does that dog have a human? And then all of a sudden you hear, don't worry, she's friendly. And it's like, that's cool, that's great. But that to me is a cop-out. That's an excuse saying, my dog isn't off-leash trained. I can't call him back. You deal with the problem. And if you have a dog that's social, it's not really a problem. If you have a dog that's antisocial or working on issues, it's a huge problem. So you yelling, your dog is friendly. Well, that doesn't matter if mine isn't.
Right. But even, you know, even if you have a dog that's very social and very friendly,
a dog charging.
The other dogs that are on leash might not be. They might be working on something. And so if you can't recall your dog and get back control over that dog, if somebody's like, oh, you know, my dog isn't ready to meet today, like that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
I think, and I've heard you say this a million times, but off leash is not a right. It's a privilege,
mm-hmm.
right? And that it might be a little bit of a tough thing for folks to hear, but your dog needs to be able to be in control on leash next to you in a heel for it to earn that privilege to be off leash.
Absolutely. Because once it's off leash, it has way more possibilities to make its own decisions and walk one way or follow a scent this way or dig or chase that dog. So you want to make sure your dog is checked in with you, even if you don't have that physical link of communication through a leash.
Mm-hmm.
So I want, if a dog is walking in front on leash, it's not mentally checked in. It's not actually walking with its human. It's walking its human.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't take them off leash unless you already have that really solid, fluid communication. The leash is kind of obsolete when you're walking. Your dog is just in tune with you. Then we can have off leash.
Okay. So provided that you meet those criteria,
mm-hmm.
how would you go about instilling recall with your dog, building that capability, that skill?
Like, if you think about it, when do you call your dog by name? A lot of people, it's when their dog is in trouble. And so nobody actually puts in the work of teaching come or Archie, like here, actually teaching the dog that command. They just go to using it in the worst case scenarios. Like, your puppy picks something up that you don't want and you yell at them and they run off. Your dog then thinks, oh, my name actually means I take off in the opposite direction.
Right.
We make this a game. So I make it a point that from the beginning, I'm teaching, whether it's a puppy or it's an adult dog, they're on a leash at all times. And whenever I use their name, I can pick up that leash and bring them towards me. So I work on recall even in the house.
Mm.
So for our Puppy Essentials online training, we did a segment on teaching recall for the real world, but we touch on it too on in the home. And in the home, so you can do this with your basic obedience where you teach your dog sit, you teach your dog sit, stay, you teach your dog sit, stay, come. That's great. And I love doing that for puppies. That's easy for everyone in the house to practice, but that's not realistic for real world situations. That's a good little imprinting of here's what this word means. And every time I say it, you got to come here. And I'm going to reinforce really heavily at the start, lots of praise, lots of treats. And then I'm going to wean off a little bit. I mean, this is really important because when you do intermittent reinforcement, the likelihood of the behavior increases.
What is intermittent reinforcement versus constant reinforcement?
I switch it up. So sometimes you get a scratch on the, behind the ear. Sometimes you get a treat. Sometimes you just get a smile. Like, right. You don't get much at all because I want this behavior to be, when I say your name, you come running every single time. So it has to be foolproof, and it has to be, even when I don't have bagging strips on me, you come running. I more so lean on the praise side of how I reinforce, but if you have a food motivated dog, by all means use that, but then start to reward randomly so that the behavior becomes even more predictable. I only start with sit, stay, come with puppies. I don't work with that to start with adult dogs. It's because we actually need our dogs to be in a distracted state to teach recall so that it becomes, no matter what's happening in your environment, whether there's someone approaching or another dog or a squirrel or a bus going by, you choose to turn around and come back to me. So you're going to want a long line. You're going to want whatever training tools you use with your dog, whether that's a prong collar, slip lead, martingale, that's going to help you with your communication to your dog. So that if they blow you off, you still have that leash attached to bring them back in every time.
You're building kind of safety blankets or safety mechanisms into the teaching process so that not only will the dog be safe, but you'll feel more confident in working with that dog on that strategy.
Yeah, and it's like training wheels. And so to start, I might have just like a 10-foot long leash and then maybe a 20-foot and then 30-foot, like starting to increase more and more distance or more and more distractions. Maybe you start in your backyard while your dog is sniffing in one area, you call their name. They don't come, you use your leash to reel them in. The mistake people make all the time is they just repeat the command over and over and over again. Charlie, come. Come, come, Charlie. And so that ends up happening. The dog doesn't learn to come on the first call. It learns to come on the 7th or 8th.
Right. Or it just is noise and they don't process anything.
Yeah, they just choose to come when they want.
Right.
So I have my clients practice recall. Like, you should be doing it daily. whether it's in the house, whether it's in your backyard, and you should be putting in time to put it in situations where your dog is going to be distracted. Work on it. Part of their homework is working on recall outside of a dog park. Is there anything more distracting than that? That's how you're going to get your perfect recall, though.
So when you say outside of a dog park, you mean like at a dog park, but outside the fence or something, mm-hmm. like, you know, just past the entrance. You don't mean like not at a dog park.
No, you're not going in the dog park. You're staying out, because then there's all the distraction of the world, but you're staying safe.
I remember I worked on that with Ty when I was doing your social skills and drills mm-hmm. a few years ago. That was one of the homework assignments. And so I took Ty one morning to a dog park that we know is very active and that we really don't like for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But that made it a great place to go and work on follow the leader and some long line work with him. And it wasn't really recall, but like, it was so helpful because there were so many distractions around, and it was all about getting him to choose focusing on me versus the other stimulus that were mm-hmm. around him.
Mm-hmm. And it's not about being more exciting than those things.
I was going to mention that, because I feel like some training styles are like focused on excitement, and like, you know, you need to be more exciting than the other stuff mm-hmm. around in order to get your dog's attention. But I think what you're talking about is about respect and mm-hmm. about trust.
Mm-hmm. Be firm when you say it. I'm not asking a question. I'm telling you, come here now.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell you could ever be more exciting
than a squirrel.
than a squirrel or a pack of dogs running crazily in an open field. Like, no, that's not real world. And you don't even want to try. If I saw someone trying to be more exciting outside of a dog park, it would just be kind of comical.
Can you talk, Liz, a little bit about the stop command and mm-hmm. how that fits into recall training, either as a stepping stone towards recall or another resource that kind of works hand in hand with recall?
Stop and recall are probably two of the most beneficial things you could teach your dog, because those are life-saving commands. I teach stop first on leash while I'm doing walks with dogs. So first they learn heel, stop, and then stop, sit.
So what is stop for folks who might not be familiar with it? I mean, it seems like a pretty self-explanatory concept, but mm-hmm. how does it apply in the context of dog training?
So it's putting the brakes on. So we're walking, and say we get to a driveway and someone's backing out of the car and I don't want the dog to move forward. And eventually maybe I want to move away from any sort of physical pressure on the leash, where I want that verbal control with my dog. So I would say stop as I stop my feet. And if the dog didn't, I would put a little bit of pressure on the leash up, not so much so that the dog goes into a sit, but so much so that they stop motion and movement. And then over time, what ends up happening is I'm able to just stop my feet and say the word stop, and the dog stops, looks up at me. And it's like, perfect. This makes it nice and easy. So then with long line work, doing our off leash, like that's the other thing too, is I graduate to off leash. I have a leash dragging. I use a 30-foot long line, and I'll go to an open space, try to find a place that's pretty low distraction, and I'm gonna step on the leash anytime the dog goes outside of the boundary. Say I set 15 feet, so I have buffer on that long line. Anytime I step on it, I say stop to the dog. So now the dog is learning stop even when it's outside of that range of before on leash of the walk.
So you're stacking different commands and conditioning on top of each other. Mm-hmm. You've got a physical limitation that you've set at 15 feet. You've got a vocal or verbal command.
That's already been set.
Coupled. And then stepping on the leash, which is going to provide a little bit of a physical correction mm-hmm. if the dog goes beyond that boundary.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
And then once I teach stop, that's what's useful in when a dog is running in the opposite direction of you or away from you towards something you don't want, yelling stop, the dog puts on the brakes. Then that's that perfect opportunity to tell them to come back to you.
Yeah.
Tie this way or come. Right, and then they book it. And so I'm always using stop. They learn either wait until I come and I approach you and then we go on together, or stop, come back to me.
It's don't do that. Do this instead.
Exactly.
I'll tell you just a quick little story about stop. And I think I've told you this before, but It was, I think, 2010, and you had just gotten Carmen, and we'd been together for, I guess, about 3 years at that point. I think we were still living in separate cities, though. You were in Toronto, I was in Waterloo. And for whatever reason, I had Carmen that day just to myself, like for the first time.
Doggy dad duty.
Doggy dad duty. And I took Carmen for the first time by myself to this hydro field that she loved, which, you know, was along the side of a train track. There was still, I think, a fence there, but we would let Carmen off leash. And when I was with you, I felt totally comfortable, but this is the first time I had her by myself. And I was so worried. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to let her off leash. And the first time I take Carmen, I'm going to lose my girlfriend's dog. But I had the stop command. So, you know, she would take off and, you know, in spite of her three-leggedness,
she was quick.
She was fast, especially if there was another dog or if there was a squirrel or something.
Yeah.
And I remember at first, you know, that we were doing the drop leash, but my circle of comfort was very small. Like if she got like 5 feet away from me, I'm like, stop, and then wait. And gradually over the course of that walk, I got more comfortable. I got more confident with her being able to go farther because I knew that she would respect that stop and the recall and that it would work really well. And so end of the day,
didn't lose
Carmen. We had a great bonding experience. I felt more confident. We felt more connected and you probably trusted me just a little bit more.
And like, if anyone is ever uncomfortable with fully committing to off leash, use a long line, have that added protection. I mean, we've been so worried about Ty's recall for so long and really have doubled down on the training and grown. But even with e-collar, even with all of these extra training wheels in place for Ty, I was keeping the long line on just as added protection, because especially if you have a flight dog, where if Ty got away from us at some point for some odd reason, we know how nervous he can be around new people. And I would worry about him ever being caught almost. I think he's come a long way, but I would want something to keep him safe so someone could stand on his leash, reel him in, and capture him safely if that's what needed to happen.
Well, just to kind of close the loop on Ty, we talked about that time he got out of the house, but even just this week, I took him on a solo walk. I could tell that, you know, he was tired. I think he'd been at daycare. And so I thought, you know, like, this is my day to take the boys, but, you know, maybe Baker can, you know, sleep in a little bit. I'll just take Ty. So I took him over to the golf course, and because he hadn't been feeling his best, I decided not to put the e-collar on him, and I was feeling like really comfortable with him. And so we did a very structured walk. We started on leash. It was going really well. He was being like super checked in with me. And so I thought I would give him some off-leash privilege time, and it was going fantastic. I was throwing the stick for him. He was bringing it back. He was getting exhausted, and we were walking along, and he was like behind me at one point, and then he just took off. Right? Because he saw a little chipmunk go up a tree. And, you know, I tried to not lose my cool. Like, you know, I knew he was following this chipmunk. So it's not like he was just fleeing because he wasn't having his needs met or he didn't like me. He was just, you know, bothered by stimulus. So I was able to like say, Ty, stop. And, you know, he was still very distracted by what was going on in the tree branches. But I was able to get back over to him and put the leash on him and go on our way.
I will say, and I'm proud of you for that. You sent me that video and I was just like amazed. And then when you came home and you told me he didn't even have the e-collar on, I was like, oh my God, I'm really proud of him, but I'm really proud of you.
Yay.
Because you have been so nervous about Ty being off leash and you've really wanted that full off leash control. And I think that's amazing.
Well, not to like pat myself on the back too much, but I think I've been putting in the work. Like since we talked about it at the beginning of the year, setting it out as a goal, you know, I've been taking the boys at least twice a week just on my own, right? You take them to daycare. But when I'm with them, you know, I'm working on setting boundaries. I'm working on making sure the walk is structured and quality and not just getting them exercise, but getting them quality mental stimulation in addition to the physical stimulation.
You've become really intentional with all that you do with the dogs, and that is paying off. majorly.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Slowing down and paying attention to the little things, then you can have the off-leash freedom. It's making sure you're really disciplined in all the other areas, like controlling thresholds, heel on walks, checking in, all
and
that.
And not only do I feel like the walks are more enjoyable for me because I'm not worried about, you know, a dog pulling or anything like that, but I feel like our bond has gotten a lot stronger because they now respect me more, mm-hmm. In addition to just kind of loving me or having affection, right? Because mm-hmm. what is it you say? Like trust, love, respect?
Yeah. You need all three things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most people just focus on love.
Right.
Especially with dogs. I would say that long line and e-collar were lifesavers with training tie on off leash. With Carmen, I think we only just used like a 6-foot leash martingale collar.
Yeah.
And that was great. With Baker, Baker's just Baker. He's not going anywhere far
right,
from us.
Right, right.
I did do drop line with him, like long line. I just felt so comfortable with him right away. Like he's so dialed in.
Right.
That it was great. But tie, I was just always worried. And so I used that added tool of e-collar, and that was a game changer. So highly recommend that for someone who, if you think your dog can't do recall, I think e-collar is going to become your best friend. But partner with a trainer who knows how to use it, because it's not about blasting a dog on high level. It's actually working them on really, really low levels with a really smart e-collar. So I only use mini educators as my e-collar of choice because it has such range and because I can really be intentional with the level that I want to be working with the dog. And starting with low, low, low distraction areas, working that recall. I had such a negative vibe about e-collars initially. And it was once, I think it was Colleen Steckloff, LA Canines. She referred to it as a pager for your dog, or like a cell phone, where when they're out of your reach or zone, you have a way to still communicate with them physically that makes sense to the dog. So long as
you page them.
Yeah. So long as you've taught them what that association means. So we use Vibrate for Ty on his e-collar, and that means come back here right away, and he is on it. And yeah, I just loved being able to give him that much more freedom and trusting him to come back.
I know we're not trying to go too deep into e-collar or, you know, even like provide training on how to use the tool here today, but we do have a podcast episode, I think from season one, the one about tools, mm-hmm. that goes into it in a little bit more depth. And maybe we could do one about e-collars at some point and just your journey.
Yeah.
Kind of changing your perception around them, some of the strategies you've used, and when you see it making sense. So, I mean, that could be another whole other episode in and of itself.
Yeah, I'd love that too, because I'm now like seriously nerding out about e-collar.
Big convert. Yeah, yeah. Me too. So any final thoughts, Liz, around off-leash recall this time of year? Final thoughts?
I would encourage people to start working on their recall using a long line in controlled environments. And so in your home or in a fenced backyard or in an enclosed space where if you don't get to the long line in time, still that dog is not going anywhere. Really making sure you're working on thresholds around doorways so that dogs aren't running out and into traffic, because if you don't have your solid recall, you can't call them back. Work on stop, things like that. And be patient and put in the reps every day. The more you use it, the more reliable it's going to become for your dog, how easy it's going to be for them to know. And then you can start to bulletproof it by making it more and more challenging and putting it out into real world situations. But I would encourage anyone, even if your dog is really good with off-leash recall at this time of year, leash them up just for added safety. Even something as simple as, I mean, our dogs are trained to run from the car to the front steps and stay there because I'm usually unloading like a bunch of stuff from my truck. But I usually tighten up on that right now, and I wouldn't practice that because all it takes is for Ty to see a squirrel out of the corner of his eyes, and it might be enough to tempt him, or the wind blows and he catches the scent of a chipmunk family or something. It's just right now, as stuff is thawing, as we are in spring, it's just the likelihood of the potential of them running off is much higher. So be safe. Nobody wants their dog to run off or assume the worst and have them get hit by a car, anything like that. So always, always, always safety first when it comes to our dogs.
Perfect. Thanks, Liz. Really appreciate it. If you haven't had a chance to check out our bonus episode yet, please do. We recorded a special live episode on Clubhouse, the drop-in audio app, where we did a breakdown of episode one of Netflix's Canine Intervention. Have a listen. It's a little bit of a longer episode, but you'll be able to hear Liz's perspective on everything you see on the show and get a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look through the lens of a dog behaviorist and behavior-based dog trainer.
Thanks so much, guys, for listening. And until next time, stay calm and assertive.
If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment or a review. We'd love to hear from you.
We release a new podcast weekly. Follow us on Instagram at Honest to Dog Podcast.
Honest to Dog Podcast is hosted by Liz Foley and Jeff Gadway. The show is engineered, edited, and produced by me, Timothy Musa. Support for the podcast is provided by The Doghouse. For all things training and daycare, head over to their website, doghaus.ca.